Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Putting It Together. Welcome along, my name's Brian O'Sullivan, and this is the podcast of Creative Conversations, where my guest this week is Jess Hardwick. For the second time, it says Jess Hardwick 2, which I always call the triumphant return of whoever it is. So, this week, it's the triumphant return of Jess Hardwick. Thank you very much for listening to the show, and thank you for your continued loyalty and support. It's just been great. I'm so delighted to talk to Jess this week. A hugely talented actor and vocalist and voice artist, and also just a downright classy, good person. And as often is the way with these things recently, this is really just me catching up with Jess, as much as it's anything else. So it's handy for us just to have a good old chat. We kind of forgot we were being recorded, which I suppose is the best way. So it was wonderful to talk to Jess, to hear about how her side business is going. She does a lot of great photography. She does headshots, but she's also doing a new series, which she gets to telling us about, and a wee bit about her process as a photographer, and also as a voice actor, and what she misses about the theatre, and what she's been doing in the meantime, and just so many great topics. A really lovely chat, and I know you'll just enjoy sitting listening to that, to those warm tones, because as much, you know, as the content is important, as is very important to me, the sound quality is equally important, I think. So I hope that you'll enjoy a high quality sound from Jess and from me, and you'll be able to relax and listen to this interview and take it in, and hopefully it'll inspire you in some way, because I've got to tell you, I'm feeling quite inspired myself at the moment. I didn't expect that this year would be I didn't expect that this Christmas would be one where I would be A, busy at all, but B, creatively juiced, you know. So I'm doing a bit of a day job, part-time delivering parcels, and then the rest of the time I'm doing loads of other creative stuff, and I feel really excited about it all. I've got ideas, so many ideas. We're working on the panto for the podcast, which, by the way, you've got to get in your ears. 23rd of December it's going to come out, which is the Wednesday, obviously the Wednesday before Christmas. So you can sit round with the family and listen to the wireless and listen to the podcast panto. And it's going to be an even bigger and an even more magical and hilarious affair than last year. We loved doing it last year, but it was the first time we'd done it, so we had a lot to learn. And this year we've learned a lot, and we've changed the way we're doing it. And we're probably a little bit better prepared, which wouldn't hurt, because last year we kind of did it in a day, including writing all the music and everything. This year we started talking about it in about September, which is a huge difference. So we've actually been working on a script. We're really pleased with it, myself and Andrew Fraser. And the casting is underway, and some of the casting decisions we've made, I'm dead excited about. I'm so excited for you to hear these great talents, and hopefully have a great laugh, and also be warmed, and be reminded of the theatre, I think, because that's what it is for me. It's like a kind of it's the next best thing. If I can't be in a panto or a Christmas show, and you know how much I love those, then to be in one of my own creation from my own little studio here at home, then that's great. That works as a good second best for me. So I'm delighted that we're bringing it to you, and that such talent is going to be involved. And I think it's more than any other year, it's great to have it this year, because it's a panto that we can make safely, that you can hear and enjoy safely without any worry about social distancing or virus or getting sick or any of that stuff. You can just sit at home or wherever you are, and you can even listen to it while you're doing other things. That's the beauty of the podcast, isn't it? So you might be busy making the veggies or peeling sprouts or making a Christmas pudding, and you can listen to the panto. It's going to be great. And I can now reveal that it's going to be Mother Goose. And I can also reveal that I'm going to be playing the Dame Mother Goose herself. Although, sort of me, but sort of my character, Janice. Janice has been employed as Dame Mother Goose, and for some of you who watch my wee videos, that will mean something. And for those of you to whom that means nothing, please get on to Brido Hingway and check out my funny videos. I call them funny videos not because I think they're particularly funny, but because I'm just categorizing them for you. It's really up to you whether you think they're funny. But Brido Hingway is my handle on Instagram and Twitter and on Facebook. And Janice is the main character in those videos. And she is going to be playing Mother Goose in this year's Pit Pod Christmas Panto. And I'm so excited about all of it. So, if you would like to support this show to keep it going, and believe me, it's expensive and time-consuming and your support is greatly appreciated, then please go to puttingittogethercast.com and click on the donate button. It's all self-explanatory from there. You can give a small amount, a large amount, you can make it regular or one-off. puttingittogethercast.com, click on the yellow donate button. And remember to follow us on social media, PitCCPod on Instagram and Twitter, and just search for Putting It Together on Facebook. Now, while we're on that, if you are a social media whiz, if you are an aspiring producer or perhaps an established producer, someone who knows a bit about advertising, a bit about promotion and marketing, then please get in touch with me because I'm looking to take someone on to help me promote this podcast. I've come to the 3-year mark and realised I just don't have the skills to promote it properly, and I think that more people could and should be hearing it. So if you fit that description, if you're a producer of any kind, if you know about social media, about marketing, about advertising, and basically how to get this podcast out there and appealing to people that it should, then give me a shout. It's brian@puttingittogethercast.com, but I'll accept epistles from any other channel. So if you want to DM me on any other social media channels, that's also fine. So yes, I'm looking for someone, and there's money there, so that person will be paid properly, because I'm very much an advocate of that. Not that that should be remarkable at all, but sadly it is. So yes, and I won't harp on too long about that, because it's time now for our guest of the week. So I'm delighted to welcome to the studio Jess Hardwick. She's with me, and we are Putting It Together. Right, well, tell me about you. How are you?
I'm fine, I'm good.
I've started doing podcasts where I start by going, how are you?
I like that, it's nice. Just, yeah. It's good to check in with how we're all doing. Yeah, fine, it's a bit of a rainy Sunday, but I'm all right. We're a bit waist deep in copper piping and wood and stuff in the flat at the moment.
Of course you are.
Because Robbie's been making his lamps and tables, so yes. We've become a shop. Our house.
And then were you not supposed to bring them all out to a thing? And then, of course,
yeah, that was supposed to be this weekend. So we had a wee pop-up shop at a shop in Denniston called Nichols, which is like a kind of, it's like a little art gallery that mm-hmm. this lovely mum and daughter have done up to sort of support artists and put on exhibitions and things. So we found it and we like made all the stuff and organised it all. But then because of the next sort of tier of restrictions, we've had to put it on hold. But it's okay. I think it'll happen end of December, I think, in the end.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, so we've got a new slot, so that's fine.
So your side business probably doesn't take up as much space as Robbie's.
No, no. Just a little corner of the office is dedicated to me.
A laptop and a few memory cards.
Well, yeah, exactly. And a drawer of hard drives and that's it.
Yeah. And he's like got pipe and everything.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And then when all the sanding's going on, I'm just like, I can't even be in here. I'll just go and sit in the kitchen.
Oh, it's my word.
But it's looking great. I'm very proud of him. He's made many, many lamps and many tables, so it's extraordinary.
It's funny that when you get a wee niche going.
Oh, yeah. And everybody's been so, like, really supportive, I think, with kind of small businesses and understanding that, I think, especially in the arts, we've all had to kind of find something else to keep us occupied, I suppose. And I think certainly for us, like, having something creative, I think. I know that we can't maybe do as much acting as we'd like right now because of all the restrictions, but I think having, like, I've got the photography and for him to be able to make stuff, I think, has just really kept us sane, actually. So it's been it's been really lovely.
It's kind of interesting watching people find their new thing or start to, you know, focus on it more, because loads of people are doing that in lots of different ways.
Yeah, 100%. I was quite fascinated by that, actually. I've started a kind of portrait project, I think I was talking to you about it, called Reemerging Artists, and it's like a little bit like about what people have got up to in this time that's like downtime, whether that's making something creative or whether that's a new job that you've had to kind of start or spending time with family. And it's just been really interesting kind of speaking to people about, you know, because it's been quite a long time now, 8-9 months of, it's enough time to kind of really find something else or to notice what's changed in your routine that maybe wasn't there before, or reflect and stuff. So that, I've loved that, like kind of, finding out what people have been doing in this time.
I guess it's been enough time for us to find a new normal, for it to even kind of, Like, I've almost forgotten that I'm annoyed that I'm not acting and stuff.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I've just got life now, you know, and that's okay.
I know, and then it's that thing, isn't it? Like, I don't drive, so I've got so used to being in our flat and in our kind of radius, like that kind of restriction, I suppose, of how far you can kind of walk. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I've managed to make it over to Southside with my bike, but that's really about as far as I've got. Yeah. And it's funny, because now I think if I was told, you know, can you hop on the train to London? It'd be such an adventure. It'd be really exciting.
Huge, yeah.
Whereas I used to do it all the time, and now it's like, that would be a really big thing to like go down south, because we've just got so used to being in this little tiny, even going to a new supermarket sometimes is quite exciting.
I'm looking forward to being annoyed at having to travel, being in an airport and being like, oh my god, it's so long, and all that stuff.
I kind of feel like I'll never complain again about it. I'll be like, oh wow, airport shops duty free. Something different.
I've heard lots of people say I'll never complain again, and I'm like,
I will slip back into it again.
We love a moan anyway.
Oh no, that's how we're all made, isn't it?
But then I suppose it's kind of your new series that's kind of meta, because that's your thing that you've been doing to kind of re-emerge or to keep going.
Well, yeah, actually, exactly. I think I'm going to try and do, I've never done a self-portrait before, but I think maybe one of the shots I'll end up trying to take one of myself, probably in a mirror or something, because it has sort of, just having that in the back of my head, I think, has been really, like, really lovely. Kind of think, you know, when you chat to somebody, and each person I kind of spend quite a lot of time with, like, kind of talking about their experience, and then we work out together what it is that, you know, we can use as the shot, and then the setup, and then we can organize a day and do it. And I think editing them and putting them together, and I love when people have been so brilliant and so open about their experiences, because after we've settled on the picture and everybody's happy with that, I sort of say, can you write me just a few sentences to give it a bit of context and a bit of not personality, but just for people who maybe don't know you, to kind of get a feel of who you are and what the picture is of. And it's just been, I found it quite emotional, like some of the texts that have come through with people's texts to accompany the picture and, you know, linking their experience to the image. It's just been, it's been fascinating and really moving. And I hope that, I mean, I'm not massive on social media. I've always sort of taken a wee bit of a step back from it, but I think I'm trying to learn how to use it properly to be able to get the photos out so people can see them, because I think there is, you know, I think there's it's sort of comforting, isn't it, when you see a photograph and maybe read a bit of text, and if there's something in it that you can relate to, and you maybe know the people, you don't know the people. I think I'm quite interested in that and how that maybe affects an audience when they read it.
I think there's something about everyday beauty as well, looking at your most recent ones. It's kind of like these images are quite normal situations, but they're given a vibrancy that we don't normally see.
Yeah, like every situation's kind of special, but we sort of take it for granted. And then when it's highlighted, you kind of see it in a different way. Yeah, totally.
And you go kind of like, oh, that's magical that Hannah Jarrett Scott worked in The Greengrocer.
Oh, yeah, I love that story. She was my first one that I did. Yeah, and I think as well, like her, the way she speaks about The Greengrocers, I just find so inspiring. I think that, like, it's been a huge part of her last few months and being part of that community and a key worker, you know, providing fruit and veg and food and stuff to Pollock Shields and to people in that community. And I think it's really been a big part of her life. And I found her text really moving. She was the first one I did, so that was a nice way to sort of start it all off.
But it's nice when people aren't resentful about doing something else, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I think that's kind of what we do, though. We're so resilient. Like, I think I've definitely had points within lockdown when I've been really angry or really upset or felt a bit lost or just sort of, you know, because you are so alone sometimes, like, because you're not really seeing friends and family as much, or, you know, Zoom and phone calls are wonderful, but you're not in their presence. And I think that can sometimes make you feel a little bit like, am I the only one who's feeling and thinking these things and worrying about this and that? And I think when you connect to other people and realize that in their own way they're having a similar time, I think that's really reassuring. And
seeing people just being normal, I suppose.
And slowing down. I don't know about you, but I found that I usually am always kind of going at 100 miles an hour, and I've had to really retrain myself to be like, if you manage a food shop today, that's a real achievement. Do you know what I mean? Go for a walk and you're like, yep, that's my job done for the day. I don't need to do anything else.
Well, all the other kind of expectations become a bit arbitrary, because like that pace that I go at isn't really useful. hasn't really been that useful this year to me because there's nothing to put into it. Although I have started doing this delivery job and it does demand you to move quite quickly. So I'm like, oh, it's kind of good to be back kind of a bit frantic. I guess that franticness sometimes.
Are you on a timer? Like, how does that
work? I was originally, but I switched jobs to the Royal Mail, and the Royal Mail is a bit more like a friendly aunt.
Oh, that's good. So you can kind of get it done, but in your own pace.
Yeah, pretty much. And if you run out of time, then they give you too many parcels. So you just bring them back. Whereas with the private companies, it's like, you don't run out of time, or you keep going until it's done.
Oh my God. It's mad, isn't it? Because like, we're on the second floor, and whenever the delivery guys run up the stairs, I'm like, that must be such good exercise, running up all these tenement buildings all day,
I was in Park Circus yesterday, up and down stairs, like, and it feels like every time you look at an address, it's like 3-3, you know? And you go up and then you realise there's another set of stairs up to the loft kind of bit.
The secret one.
Yeah, and like the furthest away door, that's always that one. I'm like, why is it?
And then they're not and you've got to run back down again.
The other day I did that and I got all the way up in a lift, and then they weren't in, and then I realised I didn't have any other cards in my pocket to write out the wee card.
Oh no.
So I had to go out, back down, in the lift, and then get the cards back up. And you're going,
and have you got a red van?
I've got a red van.
Have you?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's what you want.
I'm going to do your portrait with a red van, I've decided.
Yeah, that's great. One of the other guys came in yesterday and he had a Royal Mail hat. And I was like, where did you get that? Like,
maybe that's the upgrade.
That was a big deal to me. We started at the same time, like this week. And then he goes, oh, my mate used to work for Royal Mail and had it lying about. I was like, damn it, I want to
You should send them an email. Do you have to wear the shorts?
No shorts.
I love it. Our postman wear shorts all year round. So
because you get really warm, like running about.
Yeah, yeah.
I was out in a t-shirt yesterday and like it was frosty, but I was sweating. No shorts. No.
No shorts.
Own clothes. Okay. And a rubbish old high-vis.
But you've got the red van, and that's the most important thing.
I think as long as you've got the van, it's fine. Gives you the credibility. Yeah. So it's been a weird old time. I mean, what were you doing right before the lockdown started?
So just before, I was up in Pitlochry doing Barefoot in the Park, which is a co-pro with the Lyceum. Mm-hmm. And we just opened. So we opened on... I think we opened on the Saturday. That was opening night, which was great. I feel really lucky that we did actually get to do the show. Like, you know, because we'd done this sort of month of rehearsals and it was all good to go. And we did get to do it in front of an audience and we did get to open. So I feel really lucky because I know a lot of people weren't able to open up and if they'd been in rehearsals. So we did that. And then we closed on the Monday. So we'd literally just opened it and then we all had to pack our bags and go home, which was quite strange. It feels a bit like unfinished business, you know, you didn't kind of see the run out. So I sometimes feel a bit like those parts are still like in you a little bit because you've not not played it out. Totally.
Is Barefoot in the Park it sounds stupid because it might be set in a park, but isn't it set in an apartment way up, like on a high floor? Speaking of top floor apartments.
It's all the whole thing is set in the one space, and then kind of throughout the course of the play you sort of watch it fill up with furniture. So they've just moved
at the top of the first act.
Sort of married couple, and it's this, I suppose it's a sort of little kind of fly on the wall, like watching this very newlywed, quite young couple working out what it is to live with somebody, which I found quite funny because actually Robbie and I moved in just before lockdown. Like, so I was doing the show and stuff.
Right.
And I think there's been a lot of parodies of like we've went into lockdowns. So we've been working out how to live with each other and navigate your space and stuff. So I found that quite funny. I was like, I finished Barefoot in the Park, but I'm sort of living it in real life now.
Well, unfortunately, your dialogue's not written by Neil Simon.
Yeah, and we don't speak in American accents and we're not as funny as the characters in the play.
And then the play finishes and everyone can go home and forget.
Whereas we've got to, if we have an argument, like, wait it out.
Oh, man.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a really good script, though. It's a shame that we, maybe, I know, who knows, maybe it'll have a life after when everything settles back down, but it's such a good play. I think people would really like it.
It's a great play. Fun. I saw it in Providence, Rhode Island at the Trinity Rep years ago.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's so cool.
But they have a couple of little theatres that are like probably 150 seats, if that.
Uh-huh.
Kind of almost a bit bigger than Trav 2.
Yeah.
But the stage depth is huge and they put in full set. So
that's so cool.
Like,
that's amazing.
The Barefoot in the Park set was like 2 feet raised off the ground, and the 2 feet were like, it was like covered in brickwork. So you felt like you were looking up into their apartment, and they had windows.
Yeah,
and
I think it'd be really cool, quite intimate actually, because the text is so naturalistic that you would feel like you were sort of spying in on them or something. That's
exactly.
So cool.
And it was like looking through the window at them, and then the windows were kind
amazing.
Of open. And, yeah.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was a lovely show. I'm glad that was the one that we kind of, it was sad not to finish it, but without sounding cheesy, it was just really full of love. And it was one of those shows that, like, you know, I think you kind of leave feeling happy. And I'm glad that it was sad to sort of say goodbye to it because it was so sudden. But I'm glad that that was the one. Because, you know, sometimes when you've done a tragedy or something quite heavy, like, you really need the resolution with that, I think, sometimes to finish it.
The whole gestalt of it, like, go through the process and complete.
Yeah,
and
to, like, let it out. Yeah, and finish it. And I think, actually, I don't mind having had to leave with that. That one as the last one.
I suppose, you know, coming out of this, I wonder if we're going to find people wanting to put on more stuff like that, you know, to give people a bit of to cheer folk up. Do you know what I mean?
So, and also to get people back into the theatre as well. Because I think when we've been programmed so much to be, you know, keep our distance and not be in big groups, like, I think it might be quite scary for people to, you know, venture back in. And we need to make people feel safe and able to do that, because you know, it's important to get audiences back, and maybe kind of shows with heart and positivity is the way to kind of get people back in.
I guess I wonder if, you know, in the long run, it might it be good for us, like, what if a bunch of people that never came to the theatre start coming, because we start putting on maybe just more widely accessible, in many senses of the word accessible, of course, stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to do a show with all my wee characters that I do online.
I need to watch some of these. Please tell me more.
Oh, have you not seen them?
No, I saw them, but I've not, like, properly watched them. I need I need to.
That's because you're not a social media animal. That's why.
No, I've been really bad. I know I've been really bad on that. I need to get better on it. I just sort of have to. I kind of go through phases when I'm like, okay, cool, I'm gonna put some stuff up, and then I'm like, no, I can't get sucked into my phone. I need to just be put on airplane mode and just switch off from it.
But you see, I mean, for someone who says you're not good at it, it looks great. Like, it's doing well. It's a nice.
I
never feel bombarded in it, but I go, there's a nice thing, you know.
Oh, good. Okay, that's what I'm trying to do. Good. I didn't want to sort of feel like I was shoving it down people's necks, but it is also, you just want to put enough up to gauge attraction and hopefully for people to kind of, you know, connect to the content and stuff. But I just find it quite mind-boggling a little bit. It's a bit of a maze for me.
But it's weird, like, self-promotion, isn't it? You kind of have to, it's become a big part of our business now.
Well, I find as well, like, I kind of do the photos and stuff for Robbie's lamps on his page.
Yeah.
And I find it so much easier doing it when it's for somebody else. Like, when you're sort of taking photos and promoting somebody else's stuff than when it's your own. It's really difficult, isn't it, to kind of
put
your own
stuff
out there.
Saying big descriptive words, you know, on the podcast, social media, because I'm bigging somebody else up. Look who we've got on this week. Isn't it brilliant?
Yeah.
You know?
But when it's your own, it's hard, isn't it, to kind of... I guess be like, look at this thing that I've done. I find that quite hard. It's kind of quite, like, quietly just putting it out there and letting
look at
it
me. I mean, I'm probably not any
herself.
Good, but, you know,
please have a look.
When did you start taking pictures?
Oh, I think, do you know, my dad always had cameras. He was a radiologist, so obviously he took x-rays, photographs of the inside of people's bodies. But he always had cameras and did a lot of landscape photography. And so I sort of was always around it. And I had an okay one kind of when I was at drama school. And do you remember when we didn't have, you know, good cameras on our phones?
Yeah.
I mean, that was probably about, 10 years ago or something. And I used to always have this camera. So whenever there was, like, parties or whatever, I would just take loads of pictures and then edit them all and then put up a classic Facebook party album.
Oh, right.
Yes. So everybody would be like, Jess will do it and she'll document the photos of the evening. And then kind of when I left drama school and that kind of first year out, I kind of saved a bit of money from those jobs, and then that's when I bought, like, my proper camera. So I've been doing it sort of since then, so maybe about 6-7 years.
Right.
And then, like, I think the last sort of 3 years I've sort of really feel like, you know, it took a bit of time because I sort of was self-taught, and my dad, as I said, like, helped me a bit because he understood the technology of it all.
Yeah.
And so pointed to me in the right direction of what equipment to use and how to use Photoshop and Lightroom and stuff to edit the images. But I think the last 3 years, when I sort of built that confidence up, was when I've would say I've done it properly, if you know what I mean. Like, kind of that's what I enjoy doing as like a kind of second job, I suppose.
You must just learn new stuff every time you do it, you know, especially I always find with self-taught stuff, you know, you do it again, you go, oh, that's how you
Or you speak to somebody else who maybe does it, and then you go, oh, you use that lens, or oh, that's how you got that effect on that picture, or something, you know. It's just, it's sort of, it's a funny thing. And I think what I've quite enjoyed doing with it is I love doing the headshots, and I've loved doing the portraiture, because you meet people and it's a way of speaking to people one-on-one. And I think that photography can sometimes be quite lonely because you're sort of off with your camera, like taking shots of things. And I did a little bit of production photography for my friend Finn and Vicky for the show that they did, that they directed at the RCS, the Backeye, with the students. And they had asked me to come in just to take some shots. And it's so funny because when you're taking photos of a play, it was so nice being in a theatre. It was lucky enough to have got to watch some live theatre sort of a couple of weeks ago. And that was quite, I found it quite emotional, actually. I was like, oh my God, I'm actually in a theatre watching people on stage. This is going
to
happen
again. I think I'll definitely cry if I get to, to be in the theatre again.
I think, thank God I was there with the camera, because I think that sort of made me like have to focus on another job. I think if I'd just been sitting watching it, I'd have been in floods of tears. But it is funny because when you're taking photos from, I suppose, from the darkness, you're sort of, it's a bit voyeuristic, like you're kind of watching and picking up on moments, and I really like that. But I think that you can also get a little bit, it can be a little bit isolating in a way, because you sort of take the photos, you go home and edit them and you load them. But I love doing portraiture because you meet people, and part of taking the picture is sort of speaking and making somebody feel comfortable and getting a feel for them. And I think that's nice, because you can emerge, I guess, that sort of skill set that you have as an actor of communication and interest in human beings. Like, I think that's why I love doing it, is because it's just, people are interesting, and it's nice to marry the two things together.
Yeah, well, I totally feel that with this, you know, it's a similar type of a thing. But then I suppose, in a way, the camera is kind of between you, but doesn't that create a sort of a little buffer so that you can say more sometimes?
Yeah, I think maybe you're right. You kind of talk, and then the camera's the thing that
you're not just looking directly into somebody's eyes and talking to the depths of the soul.
That's really true.
You know?
That's really true. It's that slight thing that's in front which allows them to maybe relax a little bit. Yeah.
I find that's why I always like giving people lifts, because you end up chatting for ages.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
But like, you don't have to look directly at somebody, so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't feel as weird, and then you end up talking.
And we don't, do we, in real life? Like, quite often those big chats that you have with, you know, partners or friends or family is when you're on a walk, or you're like, you're looking straight ahead and you're able to kind of open up.
Yeah, exactly,
like we don't often do it, do we? Like, staring into each other's eyes.
No, it feels weird, I guess, when you actually do it.
Yeah.
Get all Meisner.
Totally. And I think when you're thinking of things, you often, even now when I'm speaking to you, I'm not staring straight ahead. I'm like looking up out the window into my neighbour's flats and out up at the sky, because you're sort of trying to catch your words or something from.
Yeah, don't they say that you look in different directions depending on what you're looking for? Something about where the eyes go down and left is like trying to remember something, or.
I think up to left is a lie, isn't it?
Is it right? Okay, and then one of the rights is like to make up, you know, to add something to the story, or
oh, absolutely.
I don't know.
I'm quite dyslexic, so I always get my lefts and rights muddled up. So I wouldn't want to kind of assume that somebody was lying.
Oh, right, okay, you're lying, you bastard! Oh no, you're telling
lying.
Something
oh,
really
no,
true.
Got,
okay.
Yeah,
the opposite. I'm so sorry. I find that thing about kind of sitting in the dark and being a bit invisible a wee bit when I'm editing the podcast, actually, because you know, you're sitting with this quite an intimate conversation with somebody's voice and stuff, but you're sort of, you know, I'll spend more time with this later than I am doing right now, if you know what I mean.
100%.
You know,
I find that with them. Yeah, totally. If I've done a headshot session, you know, you're with somebody for maybe a couple of hours, and then, you know, you get up 400 odd photographs of their face, and then you spend another 2 hours on your own
just looking at them,
looking at their face, and then when they send you their edits, you know, to come to you that you're going to edit, you're zooming in to like right into their nose or onto a spot, or like,
oh God.
And you kind of go like, okay, cool, just fixing that, and you go, I really know that person's face inside out at the end of that session.
Do you look at people really differently? Funny. Like, do people look different to you after all that?
I don't think so. No, I wouldn't say they look different, but I'd say I feel like I kind of intimately know, like, like every element. Or I'd be like, oh yeah, I remember I used to, there was a little stray hair and I had to take that out on all of the pictures or something. I don't know.
Oh God, now I'm thinking back to my headshots. And going,
oh, I can't remember now. I only retain it for about a month or something.
Oh yeah, I mean, you've done so many since then.
Yeah.
I do want to do more. Have you found, I mean, it seems like your business has gone from strength to strength, even in lockdown.
Oh,
have
yeah,
a lot no, of people been coming for more?
Yeah, it's been good, actually. I think because I'd love, one day I really want to get a nice wee studio space in Glasgow, but I think just because the restrictions keep on changing, obviously, like, you know, money-wise, it's quite a big outgoing to pay for rent on a space. So until I know that I can definitely get in there and safely have people in to shoot, like, I don't quite want to commit to paying rent on a studio just
yet.
Yeah,
of course, yeah.
And also what's great is, it's a wee bit tricky because it's getting a little bit colder. But people have been fab and really resilient of that. And Photoshop is a wonder. You can get rid of any red noses.
Right, okay.
But it's been great, actually, because I do them outside. So it's really safe and you can kind of keep your distance. And I just wear a mask and stuff and lots of hand sanitizer. But it just means that it's the sort of safest way of doing it, really, being outside. So at the moment, that's kind of what I've been doing. But I think a lot of people, it's quite a nice time to sort of check in with, you know, yourself, I suppose, because there's not awful lot of work happening. I think what I found is a lot of people are like, okay, I've finally, you know, get my headshots redone or get my showreel done or voice reel and stuff. Yeah, sort the stuff out that you've been meaning to do for a while. And I think that's a really, it's quite a positive way of kind of using the time constructively, I suppose. So I think that's been really good. But yeah, I don't tend to take too many people in a week as well because I don't like to, you know, if you take too many people on, then, you know, you can only need to have a bit of space between people and stuff as well, just in case with restrictions too. Like, I think just kind of adapting, isn't it? You've got to kind of adapt to whatever the surroundings are and what situation we're in just now too.
But then to draw another comparison to this podcast, I think I could do like four interviews in a day if I wanted. Not that I've got people queuing up, but I mean, it's physically possible.
Exhausting. It's tiring.
You really want to give quite a lot to just that one.
Of course.
And give it weight, you know?
Yeah, I used to sometimes, like, you know, a few years ago, I used to sometimes do two people in a day because if somebody was like, oh, I really can only do that day, I'd be like, okay, I'll try and make it work. Mm. And actually, I only sometimes do that now if somebody really needed it to be then, just because you're right. Like, I think I don't like there being a time pressure and you kind of want to give somebody time, and it's really important to feel connected and not rushed and to be able to give it your all and then go away and be like, yeah, I've done a day's work and that was all of me, rather than kind of giving half your energy. So
kind of ragged. And,
exactly. So I'm kind of the same. I just do one person now in a day.
I have a strange affliction that's with diaries and stuff, where in the future I think that I can fit much more stuff in than I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm like, and then you I get home at 8 and then, like, I have to do a podcast. That's fine, because I can do it between 8 and 9. And then I'm like, well, when will I eat though? I get to the day and I'm like, that's just crazy.
I know.
I guess I've got high hopes for myself.
Yeah, it's good though. It's good to be. I think being busy is the key. Mm. I think I'm bad at taking time out. And I think when I've got stuff on, I kind of can keep on going. But I do have to learn how to just also sit still and not, you know, not always like, you know, overstretch yourself.
Yeah, next.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we're kind of hooked on that rush though. And maybe not just our business.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe because we're so used to, you know, if you're doing a show in an evening, like, you're, you know, we're used to, you know, two show day and stuff, like, they're exhausting, but you're capable of it. So when you know you're capable of filling your time, you kind of want to keep on doing that. But I think it's impossible to run at that energy all the time.
Also, I guess you have your dinner at 6 o'clock and then you really go to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas for a lot of people, that's the end of the day.
Mm, totally. I always find that shift really funny, don't you, when you're in rehearsal and then you've been used to doing sort of 9 till 6 or something rehearsals, and then you've got the evening off, and then that sort of funny tech week when it's all hours, hands on deck, and then
I love that.
I love that as well.
One day
we'll get to go back for 10 weeks.
Having a moan and having a 17th cup of tea.
Loads of tea, all your costumes, laying all your like makeup and stuff out on your towel
nice
and neatly.
Up,
I love that. I know. Buying yourself all your wee treats, like a treat cupboard of sweets and all that.
Lasts about a day for me, all the sweets, mind you.
Oh yeah, me
I'm
too.
Out the next
me
day
too.
Getting more. Oh, I miss it terribly.
I know, me
terribly.
Too. And then there's that shift, and then it goes into you're off all day, and then you're in, your day starts at sort of 5 o'clock, as you said.
Yeah,
when
like
you go
that.
Into work. It's funny.
There's something yeah. about that kind of, I don't know. I remember when I was doing shows as a kid and I had to be at school all day mm-hmm. and then go to the show at night. And I always used to talk to the adults in the show and be like, so what do you do all day? Like, you don't have to do anything. And they couldn't explain to me. They were like, I mean, you do have, you have to do, because you're an adult.
You've got
and that,
life.
You got to do stuff. And I was like, what do? You just sleep and then you come
just
to work. And
watch a lot of Netflix.
Yeah, it's great. And then you just do the show. I thought it was like the dream life. Even when I was a kid, I was like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Hang out all day and then do the show at night.
And then come to do the show. Yeah. Gosh, I know. Hopefully, next year we'll be back at that again. Yeah.
Now, you've been doing quite a lot of radio.
I have done a couple of plays during lockdown, which has been really, I feel so lucky to do that, actually. Done a couple of sort of voicey things like this when you're kind of recording from home, which is always quite funny because you sort of have to, this time I'm just doing it at the desk, but obviously for like sound quality and stuff recording, I've sort of locked myself in my cupboard surrounded by coats
of
and
course,
a duvet.
Yeah.
It's so strange, isn't it? And you log into Zoom and you can see everybody else on their little screen, like inside their cupboard.
You've got a duvet around
jackets.
Your head or something. Yeah. Hi, morning, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. But the last, I did a wee radio this week, actually, down at the BBC, and it was so great.
Oh, you
we
went
back
there?
In the studio. Yeah, yeah, we were in the studio, which was amazing. It was so good. And they've done this great setup when it's little pods, so they only can have four people in at a time to record, and you're not allowed to sort of sit in the green room and stuff. So you just come in for your timing, and then you've got your little workstation surrounded by screens that you kind of wipe down when you're finished at. But so it's quite strange because you're not always looking in people's eyes when you're acting, but I guess it means that you have to tune into your senses and just really listen, I think.
But that's probably good for audio stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's amazing that they've found a way to get people back into the building, so that's really cool.
That's class. I'd really want to do some of that myself.
Yeah.
Some of the old radio. I just love listening to people's voices, you know.
Yeah, and everybody's voices are so different, and
it's
really fun as well when you sort of hear people that you know really well doing accents as well, because you really, when you can't see somebody's face, it is like, I can't believe that's you. In fact, actually, in the radio we were just doing, Robbie was playing my uncle, which he was really happy about.
Is that weird?
And then this, I know, really weird. And then the stage directions, it was like, I think it said something like broad and elderly, because he's got such a deep voice.
He does, aye.
Yeah, so that was quite funny.
And you tend to play younger, I think, or from what I've heard.
I think so. My face is aging, but my voice seems to stay the same.
You've got a face for a young radio.
yeah.
Robbie's voice is incredibly deep. Yeah.
Oh, I think that. Yeah, years of smoking. I think
years
makes
of smoking those rollies,
it really, really deep. Yeah. Although he's done very well. He's cut right back.
Has he?
Very, very proud of him.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
that was
good.
A kind of lockdown thing. I think he's aiming for to smoke his last one before his birthday this year. So that's really, really cool.
So there's a plan.
Yeah, there's a plan. So
good
very,
for him.
Very proud of that. It's really good.
Do you have to give things up? Are you one of those people, or do you just take or leave things?
I think I'm kind of take or leave a little bit. I think when I give myself like a restriction, it like panics me. Whereas if I just go, if you don't want to, you don't have to, and then I don't do it, which is an easier way. I think as soon as I go like, you have to go for a run 3 times a week, I never do. I can't go. As soon as that kind of like, that kind of rule gets put in place, I struggle a little bit with that.
I think I'm very much an addictive person, so like if I do something and it feels nice, tastes good, whatever, then I'll just do it until I'm sick.
Oh, the taste good is difficult. I find that hard. Food is my nemesis, definitely.
And also like if I was out for a walk or a cycle or whatever, I would go that one time and I'd be like, this is great, but in my head I'm going, right, so if I do this every other day, and I've planned away the next month.
Yeah.
It's not enough just to do it in that moment.
I know, and just to kind of commit to it. Although I'm kind of the opposite when it's like, if I go for one bike ride, I then think I'm like a professional cyclist and I like have to buy myself all the stuff. Or she goes for one run and like gets all the gear and then never goes again.
She's got sweatbands and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, that'll make me really feel like I can do it. And then I just never do it again. Stays in the cupboard.
But then the age of us being like, as actors, being like, you know, fit and super healthy and stuff, that's kind of a relatively new thing as far as I can see.
Oh, I think in the last sort of, I think sort of since I left drama school, maybe the last sort of 6-7 years, I think that's definitely been a shift, hasn't it? That, you know, eating healthily and sort of keeping fit and everything is really important.
Part of what I liked about being an actor when I was younger was like you kind of, there were no rules to that stuff. Yeah, you were just like, yeah, whatever.
Just loads of coffee.
Yeah. I still go that way, but I feel like I'm the exception rather than the rule in the green room now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know,
I find that with the food issue, definitely. I feel like I'm always sort of like constantly eating whenever I'm in shows. I just become eat for three people. Oh, yeah. It takes up so much energy.
And you finish the show and I'm like, right, who's coming to the chippy? They're like, the chippy, oh, we've got a show tonight. I'm like, hey, yes, great. We'll be
the
great.
The classic midnight feast, absolutely.
Love it.
It's because you have your dinner at like 4 o'clock or something, so you don't... I get really bad about... I think it just takes me ages to digest my food. So, you know, when you're kind of have to eat really early, otherwise it sort of bounces around in your stomach.
Yeah, you've got to time it right. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to time it right, exactly.
I had a cooked breakfast between shows when I was doing Christmas show there.
Oh, lovely.
And I said, I was working with Grant O'Rourke, and he was like, what are you going for your dinner? I was like, I'm going to the City Cafe for a fry up, because it's the only place that there's an all day breakfast that I know that's still open. So I walked along the Cowgate and I sat there and I had bacon and potato scones and all. It was great, and an iron brew. Went back and we were in loads of scenes together. He says, how was your fry up? And I was like, oh yeah, great. He went, what are you doing after the show? I was like, oh, a few of us are going out for fish and chips.
Oh my God.
And he was outraged. He was like, you'll never eat that. You just had a fry up. I was like, don't you worry about that.
Don't you even worry about that.
And I was fine. Like, and the next day I came into work and he was like, so? And he just had this look on his face as if he wanted me to not have managed it. He's like, how was fish and chips then? I was like, Grant, it was fantastic. No problem at all.
No problem.
Nothing to report.
All. Yep.
Do a show, have another meal, not a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So what, I mean, coming out of lockdown, if you can, what would be your kind of ambitions or your hopes for your career?
Ooh, I think like...
Other than like work and get back into it.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing, isn't it? Like kind of just to be able to do what we love doing again, I think is the main, it's a long time, isn't it? To take sort of space away from... the thing that I suppose is part of your identity, I guess, and what you're sort of trained to do and what you love doing, and not only kind of because you love it, but also that community element that we've been talking about. Like, you know, when you're in a play and you're with a set of people, or you're on a film set and you begin to get to know your company and what that springs up, and the chat in the wings and behind the scenes, and you know, all of that kind of stuff. Actually, just on a sort of wee side note, I was printing out some photographs the other day of behind the scene, just popped into my head then, behind the scene photos from some shows, because I used to sort of sometimes take cameras and stuff behind, and you know, in Tech Week, take pictures, or you know, sometimes for Christmas shows people were like, you can come in and take some shots, which was great. And Sally Reed is setting up a wee shop called Playing at Shops, and it's I think it's launching today actually, and it's sort of a website that she's made with artists, Scottish-based actors and creatives in the theatre, and you know, in all the arts that have been making things, you know, during lockdown, a little bit like what we were speaking about, and putting stuff up and for sale to sort of showcase their work. But yeah, I was looking through these backstage photos, because I've made a little selection of postcards of backstage, and again, like what we were saying, I found it quite emotional, like looking at like pictures of backstage, because it's something you don't often see, and then you're like, oh God. And I was like looking through all these photos of, you know, people sitting in their wings or putting on their makeup, and those little, you know, waiting just to go on and being lit, you know, by the light from the stage. And it just, they're so special, those moments. And they're always the moments we forget, because you sort of see production shots for shows. They last for years.
Yeah.
And you think when you're in a play, don't you, when you've been doing it for like, I don't know, 100 times or something, and all that routine that you have backstage, whether that's like you were saying about having, when you have your dinner or put your makeup on, or the chat you have, or who's off stage at the same time as you are and who's on, you know, all that kind of stuff. You feel like you'll never forget it. And then it's amazing how quickly after a show finishes, those details go, even though they've been so much part of your routine for however many months. And
very true.
And I don't know why I've gone on that tangent, but yeah, the backstage thing, I think was, I miss that so much. I miss that kind of routine that you have with those people, and those shared moments that are kind of hidden that nobody else sees before you go on, or somebody else goes on and does some amazing work, and you're like, we were just chatting before you went on and did that. I don't know, it's like that stuff gets forgotten about.
You just did that? That was amazing.
Yeah, totally. Or somebody comes off after having done an extraordinary scene, and then some like mischief happens in the wings.
Yeah,
and it's
or
just
it's
like,
back to the crossword thing.
Sudoku, exactly. Like nobody sees that stuff. And I think that not that I'd forgotten, but I think going back through those images was just like, oh God, that's also so much part of a show and of a production, that world that we create as an ensemble and as a company behind the curtain. So yes, I hope, you know, very much that when all this calms down, we can kind of go back to all of that. And as I was saying as well, I'd love to get a sort of indoor setup as well for the pictures and just be able to kind of explore with different. It's a different sort of thing, I think, shooting with lights and inside. And I just want to teach myself how to do that and learn more about that. And I think that can open up more possibilities for things to shoot. So as well as sort of acting stuff and getting back to doing a bit of stage and TV and more radio, hopefully, like I'd love to, alongside that, expand the space that I use for photos, I think.
You can do family portraits, like with the dog.
I'd love to do dog photos. Yeah, I know. Sometimes when I shoot outside, I do it in Kelvin Bridge, near Kelvin Bridge, and there's loads. I think I've seen every breed of dog what has walked past me when I've done a photograph.
It's joy, isn't
and,
it?
And it's funny because I'm there quite often at the same time. And it's obviously that's the time when people have, you know, they walk their dogs. Like a lot of people have that routine, don't they? And it's funny because I have absolutely no idea what the people look like, but I know what all the dogs look like.
Because
I see them all the time. Yeah, I couldn't tell you what their owners looked like, but I know all the dogs sort of back to front.
That's amazing. I just love dogs.
I'd love to take photos of them.
I want you to take photos of my wee dog.
Yeah, how is he?
She's good.
What's her name?
Her name's Millie.
I haven't met Millie in person. I've only ever seen photographs.
Oh, she's adorable.
I don't think she was there when I came to do the podcast last time. I don't think I saw her. But
no, she lives with my parents now. She
cute.
Lost her sight and most of her hearing as well. And she knows that environment better, so she's happy enough there. Mm-hmm. But it'd be good to get some really good photos of her.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd love that. Put like a little bow tie on her.
Oh, absolutely.
A flower bag. Full costume.
Honestly, amazing.
Yeah.
Do you know what? If I'm having a bad morning, see, when I leave the house, if I get in the car or whatever, I just play a game with myself where I go, right, count all the dogs you see. That's the game.
But it's different breeds. That's what, like, I just can't believe it. There's just... You think you've seen them all, and then another one comes along. That's a really cute one too. Yeah,
but I
think everybody's gone through. I don't know if you've kind of gone through that phase and maybe wanting to get another one, but like we definitely went through at the very beginning of lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I got really obsessed with fostering a greyhound, and I was on like all these websites like, can I foster one? Can I foster one? But I think that. I think everybody had the same idea, so which is a good thing. I think they all went to homes, but I was a wee bit too late.
I hope they all went to good homes.
I do too, me too. But I'd love to. I don't think, because we don't have a garden, I don't think we could get one just yet. But I'd love to maybe foster one or something when restrictions get lifted a little bit.
I like when there's a dog in the theatre as well, you know, when someone brings the dog.
That. Yeah.
It's the best.
And they're just like under the dressing room table or
just
in the
hanging
office.
Out, yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Wee Millie loves it at the Lyceum, sits at the stage door in that little seat.
Oh.
Just quite happy. Just getting attention, endless attention.
Have you ever done a show with an animal in it?
Only when I was a kid. I was in Oliver and we had, I think there were three dogs that rotated and played Bullseye, Bill Sykes' dog.
Of course. Because I did Annie when I was a kid, and we had the big golden retriever.
Oh,
yeah. Brilliant. It was so cute. I know.
Where were you and Annie?
We did it as the local amateur dramatics company, the Gala Shields Amateur Operatic Society, which was amazing. I did that kind of all the way through sort of high school, kind of 13 to 17 or something. And it was great. They did all the musicals.
And it's not like an Amdram company to have the real dog as well. So
it was so good. And I remember, I can't remember if I've told you this before, but I remember like, you know, that kind of the Tomorrow song.
Yeah.
I think it was on like the last night, and it's like the kind of bit when it's like, only a day away. And it's like the high, I can't even sing that anymore, but like it hits the high note. And the dog went, oh! And got like totally stole the show just on the last night. It's so good.
That's brilliant. You were playing Annie, obviously.
Yeah, with my wig, my little brilliant. Ginger wig.
You know, we were doing the Chick Murray play on a farm somewhere or something at Monaclemore Festival, and it's like it's mostly in this sort of farm environment, and they gave us this barn to do the show in. And there's this bit at the beginning of the play where Chick is talking to an imaginary dog. And you don't realize, well, you maybe don't realize in the play, because you might think that we're pretending there's a dog because it's a play, but actually Chick used to do it and pretend he was talking to a dog in real life.
Oh.
So it would be like someone would look out the close and he'd be standing going, right, be quiet, you. Come on. Seriously, stop that. And there was no dog there. He just did it to give people a laugh.
Yeah.
And anyway, he's doing, he's talking to this imaginary dog. And sure enough, the real dog starts barking just on cue. It was perfect.
Yes.
And everyone's in stitches like this
it's
sort of
so
sheepdog.
Good,
you know?
When that happens. I know. I love it. It's like you can't plan that stuff at all. It's so good.
No, those magical
Although you,
moments.
You hear all the horror stories. I mean, I've not done a show, I don't think, with one. I've always wanted one. I always like trying to say in rehearsals, I'm like, could we get...
Should we have a
like
real
for
dog?
Serrano, I was like, I really, really want like a toy poodle. Like I was desperate for that. And I was like, please, can we just get that in the show? And apparently it's really expensive, isn't it? Because you've got to get the handler and everything. And
they cost more than us, for sure.
Cost more, yeah. It costs more than getting an actor in.
Yeah. Okay, everybody costs more than me. Any dog, you get a hamster and it would cost more than me.
Oh, I'd love it though, but you'd be worried that it would like pee or something on the stage.
It definitely
that's
would.
That's what they always say. Yeah, yeah.
Something would go wrong.
Which would be, I mean, hilarious, but also like maybe not the best.
Health and safety, mate.
Yeah.
You'd be tripping up and suing them.
Yeah.
We had
yeah.
ponies in oh Panto
God.
Once, yeah.
Wow.
And I did Panto at the Mitchell. Two
oh, that's
live
so
ponies.
Cool.
The poor
pulling
bloody
a
things.
Carriage
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, they just throw wow. on for 2 minutes and then they would shit on the stage and all that. It's a carriage.
Would they actually?
Aye.
Oh my God, that's brilliant.
But, you know, people think that's part of the wow factor.
Yeah, definitely.
show you where the money's been spent. Look,
where did they keep
ponies.
Them? Did they have their own dressing rooms?
No, they had...
It's like two ponies sat at like
I think they
their
had,
desk.
I think they opened the dock door. And uh-huh. would bring them out. So they would bring them in like during towards the end of the first act and just bring them straight on stage and
yeah.
then bring them out the dock door and into the pony, what do you call it? Horse box kind of thing and off they
box,
went.
Yeah. Amazing.
I don't know. I felt bad for the poor things just kind of stuck with feathers on their head and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, surrounded by all these people in multicoloured costumes.
Yeah, like
what,
sequins
what's going
and
on?
Loads of dry ice and stuff. They must have just been like, what yeah. is... I mean, humans are weird enough, but what is
I
this
know,
now?
I know.
Panto.
Oh, God.
But then usually in Panto it's two people dressed up as an animal, isn't it? Have you
yeah,
ever done
that's
that?
True.
Have you ever been in a show with one of those?
I've never... I think I maybe did it at school. I think I have a funny feeling that maybe there was a cow in something I did at school. Have you ever done that?
I don't think so. For all the talk of it, I think it seems to be a bit more popular in England.
Yeah, yes, I think you're
the
right.
The old Daisy the Cow
right.
routine.
That's right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for the podcast Panto this year, we're doing Mother Goose.
Are you doing a podcast Panto?
We are, yeah.
Oh, that's fab.
But
oh,
the goose is going to be silent, so... we're trying to think of like gags for like, you know, the goose was played by Hugh Grant or something, because like
oh, right,
never
yeah,
has
yeah,
to hear
yeah.
anything.
Yeah.
So we're not sure how we're going to do that, but the goose is central, and normally of course it's somebody in a suit, isn't it? But
of course, yeah, yeah.
It's a bit easier. You can do anything with podcast Panto. You can imagine worlds, you
yeah.
know, just like radio.
Yeah. It's amazing seeing all the different, because obviously Panto is such a huge part of the Scotland and of like the theatre
yeah.
sort of calendar up here, isn't it? So it's like it's been really exciting sort of seeing how they've adapted, because there's going to be a few online ones, is there?
There's a bunch of ones that
filmed
have,
ones.
Yeah,
great.
Doing some
yeah.
version of something rather
yeah.
than nothing.
Yeah, so hopefully kind of Christmas can still be brought to everybody in a way this year.
Do you like Christmas?
Oh, I love Christmas.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that I'm like really chilled about it and it's like not a big deal, but I definitely care a lot. We've just put our tree up, actually. I was
oh,
like,
right.
I know it's November, and usually I would really, really judge people for that, definitely. And then I just thought this year, like, yeah, fuck it. It's been a really hard
oh,
year.
Whatever.
Put the tree up, we'll cover it in decorations. Yeah.
I figured something out about that the other day. A piece of wisdom that I came up with, which is
uh-huh.
the only thing more annoying than people putting their Christmas decorations up in the middle of November
uh-huh.
is people complaining about other people putting their Christmas decorations
that's
up
true.
In the middle of November.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. Each to their own. Do what you
like,
need, but no.
I'm not that bothered. I'm like,
I know,
seems a bit
do
odd to
do
it really
do.
Early, but I don't care.
I know.
Do you know?
Well, we got a kind of real one this year, and I went all out. It got quite a big one, and I was like, I'm just going to just do it. Let's just do it. And we kind of carried upstairs. I just sort of thought, if you're buying a tree, like, you want to make the most of it for the month. So
if you're
going
to schlep it up the stairs, you might
exactly,
as well make it massive.
Exactly. Make it massive. Fully commit to it. And then just, yeah, definitely. I've been planning the menu, all of that. I love it.
You've been thinking
wait.
About the menu already?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, definitely. Just more like, I think... I don't quite know what we're going to do for Christmas. I don't know. I know the restrictions are going to be lifted, but we might just stay in Glasgow. I'm not 100% sure
yeah.
yet. So I kind of thought, well, if we're going to do that, like, I'm going to go all out and go and get like lovely cheese. It's a really nice cheese shop down the road from us. And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, like the bakery and all of that. So I've just been kind of planning like, all the treats, all the food, all the edible treats that can be consumed during
brilliant,
this month.
Brilliant. Yeah. My mother does all the cooking and I just leave her to it.
Like, oh, lovely.
It's
lovely.
Grand. I mean, most Christmas days, it's just up. Like your only day off if you're doing panto. So it's just like
that's true.
A bite to eat and a good bit of sleep. I'm happy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But that's all I've done all lockdown, so no yeah, different. No,
nothing's really changed. No. Yeah.
Just be a day where I get up at 2 p.m. and then have dinner and go to bed.
I know. I said that to Robbie. I was like, oh, you know, we're going to get all the treats, like cakes and all this stuff. And he was like, we do that anyway. Like, you go to that cheese shop whenever you can anyway.
We've done it since March.
That's
every
a treat.
Bloody
day. Yeah. Exactly.
That's the thing when you eat the way I do, that you can't really keep food as a treat anymore because it's all done. It's all spent, you know.
Absolutely.
So you'll cook then?
Kind of, yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I'm not the best baker. I did watch quite a lot of Bake Off, which I really loved. But I'm not very technical. I think I'm too impatient.
Yeah.
I'm quite I'd say my method is quite ready, steady, cook. Like I can look in the fridge and be like, yeah, I can make something out of that and like throw it all together.
Mm. Which isn't great for baking because it's
not great
really
for baking.
Very specific.
Very specific, and I definitely don't.
You don't have that skill, okay.
Don't have that skill or that patience, yeah, really. Yeah. Just sort of like, yeah, a bit more sugar, like too much flour and it all comes out different shapes and like I would just it's awful. But I think Robbie and I are quite different, and he's very meticulous and he has to have all the things chopped up and laid out perfectly. Ooh. Whereas I'm like, everything's a complete mess and then kind of comes out the other end, and so it's okay. it's quite a good two very different approaches to the kitchen.
Well,
in our household
you complement each other, that's good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's in charge of dessert and I'll do the main course. That's how it works.
Oh, wonderful. So you live, where is it you live? Near Byers Road, isn't it?
Yeah, just off Byers Road, which was lovely in lockdown because it was empty. There was nobody out. It was so quiet. And then the last of 2 months, I found it a bit overwhelming, actually. There's just like loads of people just out on the town. So sometimes when I have to like walk to the Botanics, I go all the round the back streets just to avoid having to go down Byers Road. Yeah. It's just so busy.
I love Byers Road, though. There's something kind of, I don't know, there's a wee magic round there somewhere.
Yeah, there is, isn't there? It's nice. It's lovely right now. There's all the kind of Christmas tree. That's where we got our Christmas tree. We've got the Christmas trees like all over.
You sound so excited.
That's where we got our Christmas tree. I'm going to put the lights on because it gets dark so early. Yeah. I just have the lights on all the time. I'm never out the house anyway. So.
I know, I've realised there's a lamp in my house that pretty much doesn't go off now.
Yeah, I know.
Because by the time you would think about putting it off, it's like, just stick it on.
Yeah, it's dark again. Yeah, exactly.
Just leave it on.
Just leave it on all day.
Yeah. Oh, what a weird world we live in, Jess.
I know. But the stories we have,
I mean, somehow I've still been able to talk to people like an hour a week. People have still got stuff to natter on about. I don't know if we talk any less about or more about the arts. I think the balance is about the same, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Because it's always there, isn't it, in your mind in some way, even though we've had to take a bit of a...
Yeah, like it didn't go away. Like, the actual essence of it didn't go away, just the momentary practice of it.
Exactly.
Has been kind of stubbed
out. Yeah,
and
it feels like there's hope for the new year as well. And I think seeing the things that people have kind of managed to do even in this time is extraordinary and needs to be celebrated, I think, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, we're not completely gone. I think somewhere in the middle of the year it was like, will we ever do things again? I was worried.
Scary. Yeah, that was the time when I went off social media. was my lockdown.
Head
airplane
in the sand.
Mode, just head in the sand. Yeah, 100%, and kind of kicking back out again, back into the new reality, I suppose. But the new normal. I find that phrase very strange. The new normal.
What was the phrase that they used a lot? It's kind of gone out of fashion now. About the. These are unprecedented times.
Oh, yeah.
We don't hear that so much now, but that was like the buzzwords in April.
It was,
and
wasn't
May.
It? It's mad, isn't it, thinking back to that? Like, we did genuinely do 3 months of just inside. Like, you go out for your hour walk or whatever, but
we really did
stay inside.
You need
like,
to queue outside the supermarket, remember?
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, I know there's still obviously rules and things that we're all doing now, but that, I sometimes think about that and I'm like, what did I do when I was just inside all day?
Yeah.
We had a piper actually on our street when it was the clap for carers.
Yeah.
And he kind of appeared and piped up and down our road. So that was the highlight of the week. A bit of live music.
I used to do it out the driveway with the accordion.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Did you get lots of people out?
Yeah, I mean, they were all there anyway, but if I if I come out without the accordion, there'd be a wee woman across the road. Where's your music this week?
Throwing eggs at your house.
Get your fucking... Yeah. I thought she would throw eggs when I played it, but she threw them when I didn't, dear. So... Oh. That was so something. My dad did it as well. I think he was in the paper.
Oh, that's lovely.
He would go out in his kilt and play the accordion.
I love it. Yes.
It was so all we had back in those days.
Yeah. Oh, God, I lived for it. I was living for the paper on an evening, I know.
But you can almost hear us right now telling the grandkids, and we had to queue outside the supermarket and we lived for the paper.
I know.
We're already getting old.
It's fine. We can't be seen because we're on a podcast, so you can't see our faces.
You've still got the youthful voice that you've always had.
Keep sounding young.
Yeah. And actually, if anything, I'm jealous of Robbie being able to play older because I've always played young, do you know?
Yeah,
I'm
me
like,
too.
Oh, look forward to those days.
Yeah.
Well, listen, fantastic to talk to you.
Oh, it was really lovely to talk to you.
Sad it's not in person, but, you know, we'll get back to it.
Next time, exactly. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. It was lovely.
Beautiful. Speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon.
Well, you can't really argue with that, can you? The wonderful Jess Hardwick visits us once again, and she's a joy to be around and an absolute tonic to listen to. So thanks very much for listening to this episode, and thanks for continuing to support the show. Remember to follow us on social media, PitCCPod on Instagram and Twitter, and if you'd like to support the show financially, you can do it for a very small cost, but it makes a massive difference, and you just go to puttingittogethercast.com and click on the yellow donate button. Give me a shout, brian@puttingittogethercast.com at any time, especially if you or someone you know is a producer, a whiz kid with marketing and social media, and thinks that they would like to come on board and help me with this show, because it's time to expand the operation. Remember, brian@puttingittogethercast.com or on any of the social media channels. I'd love to hear from you about that or anything else. So, have a great week. Stay safe, wear a mask, wash your hands, and be kind to everybody. Alrighty? Cheerio now.